When I was 17 years old, I was a fresh-faced freshman over at Morgan State University. I was there on full scholarship for theater, and I loved every minute of it. You couldn't have told me I wasn't Denise Huxtable from A Different World. I thought my professors were brilliant. My friends were extraordinary. They are. I thought everything was deep, and everyone was beautiful in their own way. I was 17. But no doubt, there was one young man who I thought was the most beautiful man I had ever laid eyes on. He had thick, reddish dreadlocks down to here and the body of a soccer god, broad shoulders, thick neck, thick thighs, the smile that lit up a room. And when we see each other on campus, our eyes would lock like in a romantic movie, and everything would kind of be slow motion. It would feel like eternity. Yeah, life was good. That was all until one Friday afternoon. September 16th, 1994, I will never forget that day for as long as I live. It had been a particularly long day of class. I came into my dorm room. I threw my books down on my desk. And my roommate called out to me and said, you need to call Miss Thelma Allen. That was weird. See, Miss Thelma Allen was my sister Mamie Edith's good friend, neighbor, coworker. Lovely woman, but I don't know why she'd be calling me. So I called her. I said, hey, Miss Thelma. Tamara, that's what she called me. Tamara, you need to get down to Richmond. Your father's been in the hospital for a week. He didn't want to bother your studies, but he would like to see you. Her tone was off, so I said, Miss Thelma, should I prepare myself? Like, long pause. Never good. You just need to get there. So I get off the phone with her, I call a cab, go to the train station, I didn't even pack clothes, and within 5 hours, I was walking to my father's ICU room at Johnson Willis in Richmond, Virginia. That's where I had grown up, that's where my parents still lived. And there was a very sweet nurse in the background that said, he's been waiting for you, he's been waiting for his baby girl. Now, mind you, my parents were older, and I'm morbid. And I dreamed of what their death would be like. Like, I would cry myself to sleep like it had really happened. And in those dreams, I was like an ethereal angel who was, like, really graceful and sweet. When I went in the room, all I could see was my father's lifeless body laying on a bed. He wasn't dead. But his eyes were closed because he had fallen into unconsciousness while my mother and sister had come to pick me up from the train station. And he had a breathing tube. And this is the asshole I became. Doesn't anyone see his lips are chapped? Is there no Vaseline? Can I get a wet washcloth? Yes, I am. I mean, does nobody see this but me? I took it down once I realized what was happening. Now, this is where I need to tell you about my parents. When I say they're older, I'm not exaggerating. My father was born in 1914 in Richmond, Virginia.
Hello.
And my mother was born in 1916 and grew up in Columbia. Now, you know the history of our country. So to have one parent of color graduate with a four-year degree was amazing. But to have both of them was unheard of. And then my father had the audacity to want a master's. And the fine people in Richmond, Virginia said, oh, hell no, we don't do that. We'll send you up north with them. And they did. He went to University of Michigan, where he graduated with his master's and became a rocket scientist and an inventor for the United States Army. True story. And I'm telling you this not to brag about, I mean, I love bragging about my parents. I do. But so you have a better understanding why less than 72 hours after watching my father's heart monitor go to flatline, I was walking into my Tuesday morning 8 o'clock class, because it is honestly what my father would have wanted. Oh, that's where it ends. I left that class and I went back to my dorm room and I climbed into the ugliest tie-dye, Rastafarian colored, elastic at the bottom, elastic on the shoulders, adult onesie you have ever seen. And I climbed into my bed and that's where I stayed for several weeks. And my friends loved me. Oh, they did. But none of them had experienced what I had just gone through, what I had just witnessed. And they were at a loss. But they were determined they were going to get me back to my old self. Coincidentally, around the same time on campus, there was a fraternity called the Gentlemen of Quality. And they were. And they had a fundraiser going where they had a bunch of Polaroid pictures up on a board. This is brilliant. Pay attention. And you got to pick, the young ladies got to pick a young man, pay several dollars, and that young man would come to your room and read poetry. Oh, that happened. And it just so happened that my soccer god was one of the pledgees on that board, and my friends paid that several dollars, and they came back to the room, and they warned me. They said, get up. Whew. Take a shower. You got company coming. And I did. And I opened that door, and y'all, I'm telling you, you know that feeling you get when you're on a roller coaster and your gut gets down to your feet before the roller coaster does that drop? That's how I felt. It was nice. My blood started pumping again. And after a little bit of talking to him, I realized not only was he good looking, but he was smart. Like, not smart, but like brilliant. And he reminded me of my father. And I felt home. So I forgave the fact that he did not have one poetry book. What he had was this weird black love, sexual compatibility erotica book. And he had a notepad where he had tried to make up a poem real quick so he didn't look like the weirdo walking around with the black love, sexual compatibility erotica book, okay. So I forgave him for that, and I asked him if he wanted some mango juice, and he said yes, and he asked me for a kiss, and I said yes. Now, I know that sounds fast. Just wait. We dated for a little while, and after several years of dating him, my cousin Stacy said to me, oh, my God, that is amazing that all this came from an Ebony magazine. See that face? That's the same face I gave her. I didn't know what she was talking about. And she reminded me of 16-year-old Blue, laying across, still in high school, laying across her bed. We're talking about something. And I was flipping through the pages of one of her mother's Ebony. She'd lay out real nice on her coffee table, those in jets. And I was flipping, through the pages, and I stopped the conversation because apparently Ebony had done an interview with people who were going to HBCUs, and they had interviewed some people going to Morgan. And in the pictures, there was a young man with dreadlocks up to here, with the body of a soccer god and a smile that lit up the pages. And I told her, that's my husband. And 20 years later, a beautiful 15-year-old and a beautiful 3-year-old later, this year, 20 years, he is indeed my husband. And that, friends, is my modern love story.